And welcome to No Filler, the music podcast dedicated to sharing the often overlooked hidden gems that fill the space between the singles on our favorite records. My name is Travis. Got my brother Quentin with me, as always. And this is our very last episode of 2019. So, Q, we talked about this a little bit at the end of the last episode, but the plan is to essentially just play a bunch of music for the next few episodes. We're not focusing on any one particular album or artist. On this episode, we're looking back at 2019 and talking about the songs or bands that you and I discovered in the last year, which is kind of a weird, it's kind of a weird format, to be honest with you. Nobody does this kind of thing.
Hey, this was your idea, dude.
You know what? I stand by it, and here's why.
Yeah, I think it's cool. And the fact that we're just going to be playing a bunch of tunes for the next several weeks, you know what that is to me, dude?
What is it?
That's music to my ears.
God, dude. Are you going to be bringing cheesy puns to every episode now going forward?
No, dude, but, you know, that I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, like I said, this is going to be our top 10 discoveries of 2019. And, man, the more I say it out loud, the more it's hard to explain. Because it's not new bands. It's not, you know, albums that came out in this year. It's basically just celebrating the fact that life, if you're a music fan, is all about discovering new music to you as a music lover. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, dude. I'm bringing a song to the table tonight that came out in 1969.
Right, exactly. So, basically, when we sat down and started compiling our list of, you know, hey, what's the top 10 songs top 10 new songs that you fell in love with this year? I personally realized how many bands that I had just discovered that, you know, came out 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Right.
So I want to share that stuff with the audience here and with you, Q. So anyway, so the next week's episode will be our top 10 of 2019. And then the week after that, we're going to do our top 10 of the last decade. So
yes,
lots of great content coming up, lots of great music. All right, so let's just get started, man. Let's just jump right into it here. So I'll go first here, and I think we've joked about this before, but there's this trend right now with like electronic musicians with like, you know, club dance, electronic, like IDM, not IDM, like EDM, where the name of the artist is in all capital letters, or they take out a letter, or, you know, they put spaces in between the letters, right?
Or what about like that band Always, but the W is two V's?
Two V, yeah. Anyway, here's another example of that. This guy, his name is Alex, and that's what he goes by, Alex. But there's a space between each letter, and the letters are capitalized, or at least they are on Spotify. On his SoundCloud, they're lowercase. Anyway, there's this, it's almost like a continuation of chill wave, but it's like a lo-fi chill wave, instrumental usually. And a lot of times it's tied to like the vapor wave, like branch of chill wave. Do you know what vapor wave is, Q?
Yes, I'm very familiar with it.
Okay, so vapor wave, I guess the best way to describe it is like, it's more closely tied to the 90s and 80s, like aesthetically, right? Like there's a lot of, you know, just think Blade Runner graphics, you know what I mean? Like that super like...
It seemed like they never took themselves too seriously. And then they kind of surrounded the whole genre in like certain like stereotypical Windows 95.
Windows 95. Yeah, like, and you know,
that and like,
and Japanese characters,
Greek Japanese characters and Greek busts.
Yeah.
Like neon or like
lots of pinks and blues.
Pinks and blues. Right. Yeah. Anyways, a lot of what vaporwave became was more aesthetic than music, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it is very much like kind of cheesy 80s synth kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this guy kind of falls into that camp. He's more lo-fi, hip-hop, down-tempo type beats, but it's very laid back and very, like, it's just so, God, what's the word to use?
Dude, it's hard to describe vaporwave, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just background music, basically. But he's got these three albums that he's put out over the last few years called Growing Up. So it's Growing Up Volume 1, 2, and 3. Growing Up Volume 2 came out in 2018. I kind of stumbled upon it early this year. And it's just really good background music. If you're somebody like me who is at a computer all day, it's that kind of music you can put on and you know, work to. But at the same time, I will admit, like, sometimes it is so, like, laid back that it could almost put you to sleep, you know. But anyway, let's take a listen here. This is the artist named Alex, and this song is called It's Been a Really Long Time.
I love that this is the first song that you picked because it's going to flow really nicely into my first pick.
Nice.
I've always loved this kind of electronic music. And I will say, like, if you really want to get into vaporwave, this is pretty tame. Like, remember I was saying, like, they kind of poke fun of themselves in a way, like pushing the limits of what they think people would actually enjoy listening to.
Well, the
to.
Thing about vaporwave, too, is that, like, aside from the stuff that you're talking about where they're being like over the top just to be over the top,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. You know, a lot of vaporwave has like that corny smooth jazz from like the 90s or 80s as like the backing track, but it's done with these kind of cool beats and stuff over it, and sometimes it's kind of cool.
Right. And those beats are usually like the best way to describe them is like the stock beats that you would get on your Casio keyboard from, you know, 95
or something. Yeah, right.
Like, they purposely use synthesized beats that sound dated, you know?
Right. One thing I liked about it, and one thing that I think is obvious, is that this guy, Alex, this producer, he probably grew up in the 90s, like we did, right? Because all three of his growing up albums that he's put out has a photograph, I assume, of him, because it's the same kid in each picture, and it just looks like a photo that was taken of a kid from the 90s, you know. And he throws in, like, there's a song, I don't remember which one it is, but he throws in a clip, an audio clip from a Mario game, you know, from an N64 Mario game. So, like, you know, he's tapping into the nostalgic of the decade that we grew up in, the 90s. And that's a lot of what this vaporwave stuff is, and this like you know, it's almost hypnagogic too. Like we, you know, to throw that word out there again, it's one of our favorite words on this podcast. Yeah. But anyway, like I said, the whole aesthetic and the whole vibe is all pretty similar to what you heard there. So he's got three albums of this kind of stuff. That volume two has 28 tracks on it. So there's a ton of stuff to listen to if you like that. So anyway, Q, what's your first pick here?
Yeah. So, we covered the Mercury program back in, January, maybe February. So early this year. And then our sidetrack was a little side project from their drummer, David LeBlow. And he goes by Textual. So it's in the same vein of that, like almost purposely using like outdated synth sounds to make your music. And I want to bring up this artist again because we talked about him during this sidetrack. We both love Robot Science. He does that kind of stuff too. We played one of his songs during that episode. So we're going to revisit that album again by Textual. So again, if you want to, you know, if you like what you hear, first off, listen to our episode on the Mercury program, which is a little bit different. They're more like math rock, instrumental math rock. But that was earlier this year, back in January. And then check out our full sidetrack on Textual that we posted in early February. So my favorite album of his is an album called Hindsight Glasses that came out in 2004. And if you dive in deeper and listen to more of his works, it gets more and more ambient. So the song we're going to play is track 3 on the record. It's called Dirty South Still Life. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Great song to follow up my lo-fi chill wave. I wouldn't put that in the same vein, but it's in the same like building at least, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the name Textual as like his moniker for this work is perfect. Like he's really good about building those textures and like kind of drawing out like the buildup, you know, like it just keeps building on itself. And in for me, like when I'm listening to his music, and this is for that entire album, I keep waiting for the payoff. You know what I'm saying? Like with most music, you're waiting for, especially in electronic, like EDM kind of stuff, you're waiting for it to kind of go back into like a certain phrase, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. And you're just waiting for that. And with what he does, he continues to just build and build and change it. And then as we faded it out, it kind of turned into this like more ambience sound. And that's what I love about that album. So again, that was an album called Hindsight Glasses that came out in 2004 by an artist named Textual, who also happens to be the drummer for one of our favorite math rock bands, The Mercury Program. So let's move right along, dude. Real quick, we got a lot of tunes, dude. Let's get right back into it. What's your next pick?
So this is gonna seem like we planned the order of this, but we didn't. Speaking of math rock, Q.
Well, let's just say that we ordered these songs in when we discovered these artists. So each song is from like early 2019 all the way down to like recently, right?
Well, do you want to know why it makes sense then that I discovered this band when you discovered Texture?
Because we're diving into the Mercury Program.
Yes, this exactly.
Dude, and this is what we're all about, man. This is why we love music, right?
Right.
You're constantly discovering new stuff all the time. You get into a new artist, you know, or you dive into like a genre that you're into at the moment, and then it's fucking all these rabbit holes, you know? It's just never ending.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, these guys are a Japanese math rock band from Tokyo called Toe. And when I came across this record, man, it just blew me away. And I want you, Q, especially you, to pay close attention to the drumming, because it is unbelievable. The drummer, his name is, and I know I'm going to butcher this, Kashikura Takashi.
Ooh, that sounded great, bro.
Do you like that?
That sounded really good.
Yeah. I hope I did that right. Anyway, let's just fucking play it, dude. This song speaks for itself. It's going to remind you a lot of the Mercury Program and kind of that same vein. There's no xylophone, though. I will say that. But this album is called, and man, this has such an emo album name. It's called The Book About My Idle Plot on a Vague Anxiety. Came out in 2005. The name of the song that we are playing, it's called Tremolo Plus Delay.
Also, dude, real quick, let's just put into context, dude. 2005, we were still in high school. And I don't know if anyone cares, but like, think about that, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were juniors in high school. We were a year away from graduating.
So yeah, it kind of makes sense that this group was putting out music in the 2000s, you know, in the mid 2000s, because that's when third wave emo music was all the rage, you know.
And if third wave emo music doesn't make any sense to you, jump back and listen to our Jimmy World episode.
Episode 11, that came out in May of 2018. So go back and listen to that if you want to get a deep dive into the history of emo. Anyway, let's just play it, man. Again, the song is called Tremolo Plus Delay, and we got to play it far enough to hear this drum fill that blows my mind every time I hear it. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Hey, we just listened to the whole song, dude. Fucking great.
What did you think of that drumming, dude?
He reminds me of David LeBlanc, the drummer for Mercury Program, dude. AKA the guy that does Textual.
Yeah, I mean, like I said.
Dude, I love, that's my favorite kind of drumming, man. That super technical it. Shit where I'm listening to it and I'm thinking, never. Never in my life will I ever be able to play like this. I'm all about that kind of stuff, man.
Yeah, what I like about math rock is that it seems like, I mean, every instrument that you're hearing, you know, it's always super complex and very complicated, but yes. The drumming always takes center stage, it seems like.
Yes.
That's dude. What we talked about that with Mercury Program. Yes. And that's what I love about math rock, man.
Yes, me too, because I, being a drummer, that's what I'm all about, dude.
Right. And it's just, where else are you going to get to hear drumming at that level, you know, throughout the entire song, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I love it, dude.
Check them out. They're called Toe. That record in particular, again, the name is so freaking long. The book about my idle plot on a vague anxiety.
Oh,
came
dude.
Out in 2005.
That is so emo, bro.
I know, dude. remember there was a phase where like, hey, let's see how long we can make our album names.
Yeah, that's well, like music, what? Basically. My Chemical Romance, bands like that, like.
Or Brand New. Remember Brand
yeah.
New?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Deja Entendu.
I feel like we're dating ourselves right now, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. So, Q, to your point, we got to keep this going here.
Let's keep this
going to be here
rolling,
all night.
Dude.
So, Q, what is your next pick?
All right, my next pick is a band called The Soft Boys. You remember when I covered them, dude?
Was that for Spoon?
Nope. I don't even remember what, like, okay. This was sandwiched between Air and The Strokes.
Okay.
You were out of town for like too fucking long. And so I had to do two sidetracks back to back by myself. And
do you want me to do it? Like, do we want to put some, like a violin underneath you saying that?
I'll do it,
like
dude.
A little
that's
tiny
fine.
Violin.
I'll put it. Yeah, it'll be playing whatever right that, now while we're talking.
Whatever that sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, dude, I'll find the saddest, tiniest little violin clip and I'll play it right now.
Okay.
Actually, dude, I'm gonna be honest with you. I had a lot of fun doing these episodes by myself. I covered Dick Dale, Link Wray, and Dwayne Eddy for one episode. And then I covered The Soft Boys. I think I was teeing up for The Strokes. I was teeing up for The Strokes episode by diving into like post-punk rock and like surf guitar. Anyways, I was just trying to tee us up for The Strokes while you were out of town. The Soft Boys is one of the bands that I covered. They were a very short-lived post-punk neo-psychedelic band from the late 70s. And I covered an album of theirs, their first album called A Can of Bees, which came out in 1979. And I want to say that the songs that I covered actually popped up in a reissue of the album, like, which is, it's like 20 plus songs long. But anyways, this is just a really cool, I mean, post-punk is a great way to describe these guys because they're not like Sex Pistols or, you know, Black Flag, you know, traditional punk, if that's even a thing. I don't know if traditional punk makes any sense. But anyways, so this is like legit one of my favorite discoveries of the last decade, hands down. Not just the last year.
Of the last decade, Q.
Yeah, dude. Yes. I'm sad that I didn't know about these guys earlier. Let's just put it that way. Specifically this album, because if you jump to their next full length, which is called Underwater Moonlight, which came out in 1980, so just a year later, they really start to get more into like the, I don't know, Echo and the Bunnymen or like the Cure kind of post-punk sound. But Can of Bees is more punk. Let's just fucking play a tune from it, dude.
Yeah, man. Let it speak for itself.
Yeah. This is a song that appears on a reissue. No, I'm sorry. Nope. This one shows up on the original. It's actually a live recording, which is awesome. This song is called School Dinner Blues.
Hey.
looks so good, but you taste so bad. Like every piece of news I'm man ever had. I'm in the laundry.
In the laundry.
In the laundry.
That was a good thing.
I'm in the laundry.
Help!
Oh. Such a good thing.
Yeah, so like the verse and the chorus followed more of like a like that standard kind of blues structure, you know.
Oh, it's classic blues. I mean, the song is called School Dinner Blues, but that's what I love about it, dude. I mean, like they were doing a lot of, I mean, think about it. This was 1979, you know, probably edging towards 1980, and these guys were pulling from the, you know, what was considered classic rock in the 80s, you know, blues, stuff like that. That's what I love about this album. It's chock full of that kind of stuff. If you remember, the song that I covered on that episode was called The Asking Tree, which is like this super like gritty, dark blues song. That's what I love about this album. It's just chock full of that stuff. They cover a John Lennon song, one of my favorites of his, called Cold Turkey on this album. So yeah, dude, that was the Soft Boys. This is an album called A Can of Bees that came out in 1979. Easily one of my favorite record discoveries of the last 10 years, dude. Easily. So let's move right along, bro. What you got for us?
All right, Q. So most of my picks are sort of following the episode schedule of the last year. So this band is a shoegaze band. So we had a little shoegaze stint on No Filler back in...
That wasn't that long ago, dude. We covered...
back in September.
My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, it was My Bloody Valentine. And then we did a sidetrack episode on Cock and Swan. And I think we had... Before that, we had talked about Slow Dive. So...
Yes.
Yeah, we... So anyway... That kind of got me in that mindset, and I was looking for other shoegaze bands and trying to find newer shoegaze bands, and this is one of those more contemporary, you know, sometimes called dream pop, but shoegaze dream pop acts of the last decade, and they are called Pink Shiny Ultra Blast. They named their band after an album by another shoegaze band called Astro Bright, which came out in 2002, called Pink Shiny Ultra Blast. So anyway, this album has been sort of a heavy rotation for me over the last few months, ever since I discovered them. But it's called Everything Else Matters, and it came out in 2015. These guys are actually from Russia, which is kind of interesting to me, because they're not really known for their shoegaze. Q, you're familiar with The Guardian, right? It's this UK publication.
Yes.
So Pink Shiny Ultra Blast was named their new band of the week back in November of 2014.
Okay.
And there's this little article that they wrote up about them talking about how it had been a good year for shoegaze because, you know, Slow Dive came out with that, that comeback album.
Yes. I love that album so much.
There you go. Anyway. So yeah, let's just check it out. This song is great. I fucking love it. I love her voice. I can't even find a Wikipedia page for this group, so there's not much about them. But anyway, let's just listen to it. This song is called Land's End.
Dude, I love that catalog.
Thank you.
dude, what a like beautiful nod to like the dream pop shoegaze bands of yore, you know? It's like
yeah, I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's beautiful, dude. It reminds me a lot of Slow Dive's comeback, man, like you were talking about.
I feel like I can credit you to sort of turning me on to shoegaze more so than my like, you know, surface level understanding of what it was, you know.
Yeah.
I think the thing that still kind of not blows my mind but gets me every time is the fact that dream pop is shoegaze. Yeah. You know?
Oh, me too.
Because
dude,
I love dream pop, which means I love shoegaze, and I've always loved shoegaze.
You know, yeah, I mean? It is weird that those two terms are synonymous. Like,
it just proves that there's,
if you follow it back long enough, like music journalists at the time were using those two terms interchangeably for the same sound. That blows my mind.
But what's interesting to me is how one or the other term seems to get assigned to a band. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there was a ton of dream pop. There was like a dream pop resurgence back in the 2010s. You know,
like Beach House bands. Twin Beach Sister. House,
all those beachy themed bands.
Right. But I wouldn't call them shoegaze.
No.
But if you go back far enough, like, you can find bands that are in that vein that were considered shoegaze, you know.
Right. But yeah. I guess the point being is, like, I would call this group, Pink Shiny Ultra Blast, shoegaze.
Me too.
They are it's more
the drone-y,
her vocals are very dream poppy. Yeah. See, here we go. Anyway. Anyway, like you said, they are definitely nodding to the shoegaze bands from the 90s more so than anything, which is what I love about it.
Good stuff, dude. I've been meaning to dive deeper into that band for sure.
The whole album's good, man. So
awesome.
Let's cue it up. All right, Keith, before we hear your next pick, let's take a quick break. And we're back. All right, Q, what do you got?
So I'm going to play a song from Frankie Broyles, who is...
Oh, man.
I know, dude. The lead singer of the now defunct band Balkans, which for us, very special place in our hearts, dude.
Favorite bands from the decade, man.
Yes, because...
Hands down.
Yep, easily. They are one of the first... To me, I will always remember them as the first true, like... underground, quote unquote, indie band that we covered on our music blog, New Dust. I remember getting an email from, I don't remember if it was a PR dude or like one of the members of the band.
It was the first band that we, like you are kind of saying, approached us with their music.
Yeah. Yeah. And
asked us to talk about them. And we just loved them so much, you know?
Yeah, dude.
And like that album has stayed with me ever since.
Same. Yeah. This Balkans is like the best example of a punk band that took what the Strokes did and ran with it, you know? And yeah, they were like the next generation of that kind of punk rock.
Yeah, that garage rock sound.
Yeah. And what I like about what Frankie Broyles did a few years later, a handful of years later, this album that I'm going to play a song from is from 2017. You know, he kind of softened it up a little bit. Like, Balkans is pretty in your face, you know, as far as that style of post-punk rock, kind of like what the Strokes were known for early on. You know, when you listen to his solo stuff, it's a little bit dialed back. This is going to be the only song on this episode that you may recognize, because this is hands down my favorite song from the record. I played it earlier in the year when we covered Balkans. It was a little sidetrack that we did. This was following our Strokes episode back in May of this year. But I'm going to play it again anyways, just because I love this song so much. So this is a song from Frankie Broyles' solo album from 2017 called Slow Return. This song is called L Bright.
Wait all night.
voice just reminds me of a little bit of Julian Casablancas of the Strokes. But hearing that song again, it made me think of the lead singer from The Walkmen. His name is Hamilton, and I'm not going to pronounce this right.
That's fine.
But that's what we that's Hamilton, what we did dude. Right
here. His name's Hamilton. Yeah,
his name is Hamilton. What more do you need to know? Anyway, yeah. You know, which was another great, you know, post-punk revival band from that era. So
yeah,
it's interesting to hear what I love about it is it's so unmistakably Frankie, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it is that the Balkans came out with that record and then nothing, they didn't do anything. They pretty much stopped after that, right?
Yeah. I mean, they must have been like late teens, early 20s when they were in the Balkans. Yeah.
They were probably like the, you know, the band on campus that people would see at house shows.
Right. Like the best house show in town. Kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Best house show on campus. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just great to hear him putting music out again, you know?
Well, what's great is he's still doing the same thing about what Frankie was doing and maybe still doing. I mean, you think about Balkans, the stuff that he was writing in that band was post the Strokes. And now you listen to something that he released in 2017, just a couple of years ago. And it's just still right there in that, like, era of like the, you were saying, the Walkman, the Strokes, Long Wave, like early 2000s. Like, it's really cool that he is stuck in that sound, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like, it's cool to hear that sound continue on, you know, with people of the next generation.
Man, dude, we didn't plan this, but this plays perfectly into my next band.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I'm so excited speaking to hear another song from these guys, dude.
I love the man.
Yeah.
So, man. Talk about favorite discoveries of the last decade. I just happened to discover these guys this year, the last year of the decade.
Not that long ago either, dude. A couple months back.
This band is going to sound familiar to listeners of No Filler. Because I covered them as my What You Heard on the Ride the Lightning episode, which came out in October. So anyway, speaking of new bands making music from a different era, this album is a grunge record. And that's what I like to describe it as just a grunge record, not like a grunge homage or like a... Oh, it sounds like grunge. Like, it is a grunge record. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I try to be careful with that because a lot of times everybody's heard my rant about bands that seem like they're doing it to be gimmicky or, you know.
Gimmicky is not the right word, I know what you're saying, dude. You're not a fan of bands where it seems like they're just riding the gravy train. Like, oh, this sound has worked in the past. Let's just fucking completely copy-paste
right.
What other bands before us have done and not do anything new. Yeah, dude.
Yes,
I know what you're saying.
I can't say with 100% certainty that that's not what this band is doing, but there's just something about it that sounds super like authentic and genuine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally, dude. I get it too. I've listened to this album all the way through now. And yeah, dude, it's
great.
New. It's new and fresh.
It is
somehow
basically
it's
like
new and fresh.
If I stumbled upon this record in like the bargain bin at a CD warehouse or something like that, I would be like, I'd be convinced, dude, this is a kick ass fucking 90s grunge band. Like, who are these guys? They must have, you know, I guess they put out a record and nothing ever happened to them back in the 90s when they put this out. Because there's no way that this could have come out in 2016.
Dude, right down to the album cover. I mean,
exactly. And we talked about this. I think we talked about it. To me, when I see that, it's the same color palette as the Smashing Pumpkins Siamese Dream re-release. I started to rush myself because I'm realizing that we haven't even mentioned the band yet. This group is called Narrowhead. They're from Houston, I believe. They're from a Texas city close to me. So that's exciting. Anyway, this record is called Satisfaction. On the Metallica episode, I played my favorite track on the album, which is called Feels Like Sand. I wanted to play a different song just to get another more exposure to the record. This song is called Uncover.
killed it in the 90s, dude.
But that's the funny thing. It's like, would they have made this music in the 90s? Maybe not, because all of the influence that goes into this record are bands that probably hadn't come out yet.
Dude, and that kind of reminds me of... existed back in the 90s. You know, one of your favorite metal bands of the last decade, Kemis.
Kemis, yeah.
Who pulls from all the metal that came before them. And dude, that's what we preach
on this podcast. I know, that's what we love about music, is that bands like this, these guys are super young. I'm reading an interview back in 2014, granted, but it was Dallas Observer actually interviewed the lead singer, Ryan Hughes, just asking him about his influences and stuff. And he says, what's funny is he actually talks about shoegaze. He says, I learned a lot about those bands through hardcore. And he's talking about My Bloody Valentine and Failure and Ride. He said, before I got into hardcore, I guess he means hardcore punk, which it's kind of hard to track this. But anyway, he says, I was listening to stuff like Nirvana and stuff my dad was playing for me, like Rush. So by the time I got to Narrowhead, the sounds of our influences weren't necessarily new to me, but I had a better lens to examine them with because of hardcore. Duarte's introduction to Narrowhead's influence also came through his father. So he goes on to, the article goes on to say that the other vocalist, Jacob Duarte, I guess there's two vocalists, two guitar players. Jacob Duarte says that his dad was in a 90s emo band. So that's where his influence came from, which is dope, dude. Anyway, they're kind of saying it right here. They're hitting it on the head. He's talking about how he used to listen to bands like Nirvana, and then he was introduced to more hardcore punk bands, which came before, you know, that came before grunge. And he was able to sort of examine the grunge movement through a different lens now that he knew about what came before it. You know what I mean? That's huge, right?
Yeah,
and that's kind of what, you know, when you listen to bands, even like, you know, when you listen to this record, you hear a lot of Smashing Pumpkins in it. You hear some Nirvana in it, but you hear a lot of those, you know, iconic bands from the 90s. But when you listen to early Smashing Pumpkins, or at least when I listen to it, I hear some shoegaze in there. So it's all fucking wrapped together in a fucking tamale, you know, or an enchilada.
No. Yeah. One, you know, of those. I appreciate that you used tamale or enchilada, because these dudes are from Texas, and man, let me tell you, I miss that Tex-Mex, man. Living up here, it's hard to come by.
Dude, I just fucking DoorDashed myself a bag of tacos, my friend.
From where?
That's what I ate before this for this episode.
From where, dude?
Torchy's Tacos, man.
Oh.
Which is Austin, Texas.
Oh, my heart, native. Dude. Let me tell you, dude, I miss
They got the Torchy's. Best queso in the biz, man.
Do you get their elotes corn? Because if you don't...
I have had
it's,
that.
It's off the cob, tonight. But fuck, it's so good, dude. God,
I thought you were about to
it.
Say... I thought you just coined a new term instead of off the chain.
Oh, off the cob.
Man, it's fucking off the cob, dude. Next time something is badass, man. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say, dude, this is fucking off the cob.
That shit is off the cob, dog. All right. let's move along, bro.
All right.
We got more songs.
What, three more tracks?
You got one, and then you got one. Yeah, we got three more tracks.
Three more tracks, Q. We're coming under the home stretch here.
Okay. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the vinyl subreddit. I'm a big fan of that community. It's like-minded vinyl junkies. And someone was talking about this album by Al Green that they found a great copy of. It's called Green is Blues. It was his second ever full-length album. Came out in 1969. So I started playing some tunes from this album, and I got to a song called Get Back, and I realized almost immediately that it's obviously a cover of the Beatles song Get Back. So when I heard this, it blew my mind, because, like, hang on a second, 1969, that had to be around the same time that Let It Be came out, which is where Get Back shows up on. I look into it because I was like, you know, who did it first? You know, is the Beatles covering Al Green, or is Al Green covering the Beatles? So Let It Be came out in 1970. But the Beatles wrote Get Back and released this song as a single back in April of 1969. So a year before Let It Be came out. And, you know, Paul McCartney wrote it. So clearly Al Green was covering Paul McCartney. The cool thing about it is Al Green was such a Beatles fan that he heard the single of Get Back before it was released on Let It Be. You know what I'm saying? So, like, for Al Green being such a huge name in, like, the R&B, you know, soul music, you know, he's, like, a legend. He's got songs like Let's Stay Together, Tired of Being Alone, Take Me to the River. The fact that he loved this McCartney song so much that he released it on his second ever full-length album just, you know, just made me happy, dude. You know, it's something I'll never forget. When I heard it, it just blew my mind. So, here is Al Green's cover of the Beatles' Get Back. That's how you cover a Beatles song, dude.
Yeah, man. I was gonna say, I love the spins that he put on it. Love it.
And dude, in the horn section, great, fucking
yeah, that's great.
Golden.
I gotta say, I might like that better than the Beatles version.
Same, dude. Same.
Which is great.
I know, mean,
that's,
man.
That's the goal of a cover, in my opinion. Pay homage to it, but make it better. Refresh it a little
bit. Dude, and the fact that it took me until it took me fucking, you know, 31, 32 years of age to even know that this exists. Come on.
Isn't that crazy, dude? Isn't that
nuts? Man.
It seems like a very, probably a well-known thing, you know? Most people are probably like, dude, yeah, of course
I
covered
if
it.
If I was old how enough, I'm sure I knew that that was a thing.
Right. You know?
Anyways. Yeah, I love that fucking shit, dude. Man. And it's great because the only reason I press play on this Green is Blues album by Al Green is because I saw someone take a fucking picture of the album cover, you know, in front of their record player, spinning it themselves, getting into it. Anyways, all right, dude, we got our final two picks.
So here's another shoegaze band, Q. Although I would not classify them as shoegaze or dream pop because of how... How do I say this, Kim? You know what? I'm gonna use Wikipedia's term because here's a genre I've never heard before, but it applies perfectly to these guys. Indie-tronica.
Oh,
That's a
that hurt.
Oh man.
But anyway, that's bad. Okay.
But here's the point.
Image of Indietronica.
Here's the point. So this band is called Sweet Trip. They're from San Francisco, California. And they are best known for their genre-defying soundscapes, as Wikipedia says. Mm. But mostly it's their blending of alternative rock and electronic dance music. So, and that's a perfect description of them, because it is what you know about, like, indie rock, that sound.
I thought it was alternative, dude. Why aren't they considered alt-tronica?
I mean, come on. Alt-rock, indie rock is alt-rock.
That's why indie is such a stupid, like...
I know.
You know, throw it all under the same umbrella.
Right. Everything is indie rock at this point.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this record is called You Will Never Know Why. We played a song off of this record on our Chemist episode. This was my What You Heard. But I have since discovered that my favorite song on this record is actually a different song. We played Conservation of Two, which was track one. But I'm a big fan of this one. This might be my favorite track on the record. It's called To the Moon. And let's just fucking listen to it, kid.
Yeah, dude, the fact that came out 10 years ago, like, I wouldn't think twice if you told me it came out yesterday. They're right. Way ahead of their time.
I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, plenty of indie bands sounded like that back then, though.
Well, yeah, I guess, I don't know, man. Maybe that's the point I'm trying to make. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, there's something about...
Are you saying it's a timeless sound?
It's a timeless sound, yeah. I don't know. There's something about that, like, jangly guitar... you know, the subtle synthesizer that's thrown in there.
Yeah,
dude, that's something we definitely tapped into this sound and just kind of never looked back, you know, over the last 10 years. You and I, but like,
well, indie rock
yeah.
Indie rock is that The jangly guitar that you talked about.
Yeah, totally.
Is definitely a staple of that 2000, the 2000.
And maybe if you're not like mid 20s to mid 30s, you could care less about this sound, you know, but I will always have a special place in my heart for this kind of music.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Indietronica. I mean, I'm never going to say that term again. I fucking hate it.
Yeah, I get it.
But it works. I mean, totally. And you know, what's great about this record or this band, it's mostly, I mean, you heard that there's two vocalists, right? But mostly the band itself is sort of known as like, it's the music of this guy, Roberto Burgos. He's the main guy behind the band. And then he's got this female vocalist named Valerie Reyes that sort of adds to that. She kind of gets the dream pop vocal vibe into the mix. You know what I mean? And I think maybe that's why they get that label thrown onto them, because of her vocals. But you know what I was reminded of, Q? And we got to talk about this band at some point.
Okay.
Whitest Boy Alive. Ooh. I feel like the guitar and the way that they were doing the music was very similar to the way that Aaron Lindoya approaches what he did with that group.
Yeah.
Whitest Boy Alive. And we'll have to talk about that group at some point, because those two records that they put out are two of my favorite records.
Yeah, dude. When we cover it, we do them both at the same time, man. We just play songs down with from both that. Albums. Yeah.
I mean, they're essentially one. It's essentially one long album in my mind, you know?
Yeah, dude.
All right. Q, bring us on with the last song here. What do you got?
All right, dude. Well, I'm going to take a gamble here, because when I heard that, you know, dual male-female vocals from that band, I was reminded of a band called The Sound Carriers, which I've...
Oh, I remember them.
Yeah, dude. And the reason they're fresh in my mind is because I was down in Portland a couple weeks ago, and I was posted up at this really, really cool bar, and they had a record player set up in the bar, and it was a super slow night. The bartender was spinning his own tunes, you know. He would go over there every now and then and flip the record. He was flipping through the records himself, picking out tunes. And he played this album called Celeste that came out in 2010 from the Sound Carriers. And I was just going to play track one, because I figured, you know what, this is probably, you know, sparked my attention right when he dropped the needle. But the first track on the album is a single, so I can't do it. I'm just going to jump to track two. This is a song called Step Outside.
Left to fall.
Yeah, man, that's great. A lot of great movements in that, and changes and all sorts of great stuff.
The thing about the Sound Carriers, any album that you listen from them, they just tapped into that like 60s pop rock, you know, but they do it in such a fresh way. And so I just looked it up, dude, because I want to give this bar a shout out, because seriously, if you live in Portland, check this place out. It's a really, really great bar, really good vibes. It's called Blank Slate. Anyways, dude, yeah, I anytime I'm in Portland, I'm definitely gonna go back there. Good vibes, good tunes. That song again is called Step Outside from the Sound Carriers, from their album Celeste from 2010. Good stuff, dude.
I feel like this collection here, this list of songs that we've talked about, they're all sort of nodding back to something else, you know? At least a lot of them were.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just what we happen to be listening to this year. What does that mean, lots of shoegaze sounds, lots of, there's the grunge, there's the nostalgia from the vaporwave.
I feel like this is just like the result of us starting this podcast, dude, you know, because we'll get into an artist from a certain decade and just kind of surround ourselves with similar kind of music. And a lot of times that ends up being a contemporary artist that nods back to that sound. And
yeah,
you know, that's like we say all the time. And for me, this is my favorite thing about music, is how it's constantly evolving, but it always draws back from the past, you know?
Yeah, it's very rare that a band is so innovative that nobody's ever heard anything like it. You know, there's just not that many artists like that. So in the meantime, most of them are looking back, like you said, but it's taking it and improving upon it, or twisting it in a certain way, or adding to it in a certain way, and it just becomes...
Yeah, no, and I feel like the trend in Hollywood is to do remakes, you know?
Yeah,
but I don't feel like it's the same thing when it comes to music. It's not like, I guess music just doesn't have anything new to share. You know, it's like it's a totally different thing when it comes to music, where it's not like, you know, where did all the fresh new ideas, where did they all go? You know, it seems like it's all just, you know, harking back to the music from, you know, a decade ago, 2 decades ago. I never feel it's like, well, I mean, never feel it. Like
it's always been that way.
Yeah, I guess that's the big difference.
You think about British, you know, the British invasion type stuff.
Yeah.
It was blues standards and stuff. The Beatles were doing blues standards and stuff, you know? Rock and roll came from blues. I mean, this is how it's always been.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that it's not the same to say, it's not in the same way that movies just remake movies, stories, you know. How many times are we going to see the Lion King fucking story?
Right, and we were just talking before we started recording, like, there's going to be a live action Mulan.
And which I'm fucking pumped about. The trailer looks great.
I'm pumped about it too.
The big studios right now know that the safe bet is to just rehash that story that you loved that movie that you saw 10 years ago.
Right.
And people like us will come and see it because... Yeah. We are nostalgic about stuff from our past, you know. I guess the difference being that we just talked about, it's major movie studios, which is the equivalent of a major record label, that's doing it because they know it's a safe bet for the bottom line or whatever, versus these unsigned indie bands that aren't on a major record label are doing it because that's like the music language that they speak or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's what they grew up on. It's what their parents listened to, and it's what they know, you know. And they're putting their spin on it.
Yeah.
And I fucking love it, man. I love it. I love hearing a brand new band of young 20 somethings putting out a grunge record. I love it, man. I want to hear more of it because I miss grunge music. I wish we had more of it. So there you go. We do have more of it.
It's great that you know, dudes that are 10 years younger than us can get inspired by grunge music from the early 90s and write a whole new record based on that style of music and, you know, deliver something fresh for us oldies to get into.
Exactly. And that's how I felt when I listened to this record, man. I was like, yeah, this is it. We're fucking doing it again.
Yeah, dude.
Let's go. Let's bring it back.
It's time. Let's do it.
Let's have another grunge wave.
Totally.
It's not going to happen, but at least we can get hopeful about it and point to bands like Narrowhead and say, here we go. They did it. Now we just need another band to do it.
Same with Kimmis, right? Bands like that.
Right.
Like, sure. Let's hear what the next generation has to offer for us in this style of music. It's never ending, dude.
Exactly.
All right, dude. So we got to wrap it up, man. This is a lengthy episode, but song heavy. You know what? Scan through any part of this episode and you're probably going to land on a song, you know? Hopefully we didn't bore you too much with our droning on about our love for these albums and these artists and these songs.
I mean, if you're bored by it, there's a lot more coming. The next two episodes are going to be just like this.
Yeah.
But this is what I love
this
doing.
This is just a way for us to share tunes with you all. That's really what this is all about for us, man, is just playing music with the masses. You know, and this is the best way for
us
to do it.
I just need an outlet. I need an outlet to share music that I listen
to. Yeah, I don't even care if I never hear from any of you ever. I don't care.
But you know what, Q? We might be hearing from him soon because I'm gonna put up a Twitter account.
Yes.
And by that, I mean I'm going to start using our active Twitter account.
Yes.
Because it's kind of funny. I can't say that we don't have a Twitter account because we do.
But we've been avoiding mentioning it because we don't really use it.
We're not active on it.
And
we're
not active on it. It's great, dude. I'm glad that you are putting on record.
I'm committed to
our goal for 2020 is to get socially connected, you know? It's about time.
Yes, it's to have a social presence of some kind.
Yeah.
You know, because any presence on there is better than zero, which is what it is right now. So that's my goal for 2020.
Yeah. And I'm hoping we can get a little help from all of our friends on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Tell us about that, Q.
Okay, I guess I will.
Say more about that.
All right. So we're part of the Pantheon Podcast Music Network, where you can find a ton of really awesome music podcasts where they nerd out more so than us probably with music, you know, really in-depth stuff. For, you know, if you're a music nerd like us, hop onto our network. You can go to our website, pantheonpodcasts.com. You can even just search those keywords into Spotify or, you know, Apple Podcasts. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can find our network there.
You know, somebody said that it's like the MTV of podcast networks.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting way. Let's just put it this way. MTV, back when MTV actually played music.
Back when MTV was music television.
Reality TV.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But the point being that it's like a channel, if you will, of music podcast content. So like you said, if you pull up the Pantheon podcast feed on Spotify or anywhere else that you get your podcast from and hit play, you're going to hear an episode from one of our podcasts, and then you're going to hear an episode from a different podcast. So just push play and just see what happens. You know, there's a ton of great content on there from people who are 1,000 times more knowledgeable about music than we are, down to people that are super niche and only talk about one band on their podcast. So there's tons of great stuff out there. We're just happy to be a part of the network. And
And you can also go to our website, nofillerpodcast.com, if you want to dive a little bit deeper into each of our episodes with our show notes, where we link to all of our sources. You know, so if there's something that we talked about regarding a certain album or, you know, a certain like recording session that we bring up, chances are you can find the articles where we get that information from. You know, if you want to dive a little bit deeper, just hop under our website, nofillerpodcast.com. All right, man.
All right.
I'm tired of, my voice is getting hoarse, dude. I'm feeling it, dude.
Do you want me to, do we need to get the violin out again, dude?
I guess we'll play it again.
Man, you know what I think of? That fucking opening scene in Fievel Goes West. Isn't there like a really sad violin?
Well, if there is, that's probably going to be our outro because I got nothing to outro us out for this episode. So maybe we'll just play some Fievel violin, you know? That counts as, that counts as music.
That'd be weird. Anyway, so next week we're going to do our top 10 from this year. So today was more about sort of open-ended artists or songs that we discovered this year, but next week will be brand new songs that came out this year that we fell in love with. So again, it's going to be 5 from me, 5 from Quentin, and that'll be another good time. Nothing but tunes coming your way next week, and that'll do it, man. Like you said, it's a long episode, so let's wrap it up. My name is Travis.
And my name's Quentin.
Talk to you guys next week.
For the ones finding new ways to ensure the job always gets done. For the ones wearing many hats. For the ones who are hands-on, even from far away. And the ones keeping business moving forward. We are Grainger, offering professional-grade industrial supplies, plus real-time product availability and access to experts ready to answer your toughest questions. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.